From WXXI News, this is Arts Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour goes back to Boston in 1930. The Boston Pops Orchestra brought on a new conductor, a man named Arthur Fiedler. Now, Fiedler was unhappy with a perception that classical music was only for the affluent. So he worked to bring the Pops to new and more diverse audiences. It began a run of 49 years until his death in 1979. Best we can tell, Fiedler set a record for duration of conducting an orchestra. That is, until 2014, and that's because the Rochester Chamber Orchestra is celebrating 50 years, all of which have been conducted by David Fiedler. It has been a remarkable run, a run that appears to set a new world record. The Rochester Chamber Orchestra has one more concert left as they prepare for their big celebration. We're going to preview that in just a moment. For this Arts Friday, we're thrilled to welcome David Fiedler, the music director. David, nice to have you here.
Good to be here.
Thank you for being here. Ray Grossworth, president of the orchestra. Ray, great to see you.
Nice to be here.
And Tom Paul is here, the artistic administrator. Tom, nice to have you here.
My pleasure.
Ray, you've been doing some research, and we do think that we have a world record holder here, don't we?
Yes, we do, and David is still going strong. Maybe he'll be with us for another 50 years. We never know.
Well, there's no predicting the future anymore here. David's had a remarkable run here. And David, I want to go back to the start of the Rochester Chamber Orchestra, because you've been here for all 50 years of it. And let's talk about how it started and where it has come.
Okay, well, I came to Rochester to study at the Eastman School of Music. I studied composition with Howard Hanson and conducting and so on. But before I came here, I also went to Juilliard and I started conducting at Juilliard and Westminster Choir College. And with Pierre Monteux, I was very lucky to study with Pierre Monteux in the summer camp, in several summers, and so on. I landed up in Rochester with Hanson and so on. And after I got my doctorate degree, Hanson asked me to stay on the faculty, which is a very, very wonderful situation for me. And I conducted the Eastman Collegium Ensemble, chamber orchestra, singers. I took them on tour and so on. And that was at the time, around the early 60s, that a number of my colleagues and friends urged me to establish, organize a chamber orchestra, because at that time there was no professional chamber orchestra in Rochester. Mm-hmm. So with the help of my colleagues and also friends of the Rochester Philharmonic, we started our first concert in 1964. And the first concert, we featured the concertmaster of the RPO, Miller Taylor, and he played the Mozart Violin Concerto No. 4, and we also did Stravinsky's Pulcinella Suite. And this is a kind of repertory that fits a small orchestra, and our goal was to expand the wonderful repertory from all different styles written for chamber orchestra, and that's how it started.
Do you remember the first chamber orchestra performance?
Yes, I just mentioned Mozart Violin Concerto No. 4.
But is it still vivid to you? Is it?
Oh, absolutely. As if it was yesterday. No.
He still has the energy of a man to continue conducting for as long as it suits him, I think.
Yes, I am amazed. You see David on the podium, and he looks like a young conductor.
So you remember it as if it was yesterday. Did you ever envision 50 years and counting, David?
No, I have no idea. I that's not my concern. I would just like to do my job. And I don't like to look back. I look forward. But, you know, that's how I think.
Mm-hmm. And you have got a lot to look forward to this month on March 30th. And I want to ask Tom Paul to tell us about what's coming up on March 30th, Tom.
Well, it's a perfect shining example of the kind of programming that distinguishes David's taste. And I have to say I'm the beneficiary of many, many golden moments in his programs over almost five decades. I've been around and sung with him, even works that he had commissioned for me, even one he wrote, and his brother wrote a piece for me, and it's just been a high level of ride with him all these years. And now in my role as an artistic administrator, I'm teaming up as sort of a payback for myself for all those glorious times that we shared. And this concert really epitomizes the excellent taste that is characteristic of the orchestra, with a major concerto of Bach, with Federico Agostini, soloist, a very, very well-known international star who is now in the Eastman faculty, And the Mozart Concerto No. 21, which is a favorite of everybody who knows anything about Mozart. It's just a gem. And Eleanor Freer is a soloist there. She's distinguished herself so beautifully in previous seasons, recent seasons, with double concertos and triple concertos and all the things that, that we love in Mozart. And then I'm the lucky guy who gets to narrate some beautiful texts by Walt Whitman in a piece that William Kahn wrote for the Bach Children's Chorus of Nazareth College with Carla Krogstad, director. It's the most animated, colorful, energetic, loving narration about birds, their diversity, their beauty, their quirks, their presence, sometimes where you don't want them. But it's a fabulous piece, and I'm so glad to get my teeth into this one.
And that is all coming up March 30th. And again, how can our audience attend if they want to get involved there?
Well, it's 3 p.m. concert. Mm-hmm. I want to underline that fact. And the tickets are available in a variety of ways. Wegmans sells our tickets, as does Park Lee now, which is a nice addition to those that offer our tickets. And then online, you can go to www.rochesterchamberorchestra.org, and that will take you to the site where you can just order your tickets that way. And you can also buy them at the door. But we have a hunch that this concert is going to be a real knockout, sellout, wonderful event.
3 p.m. on the 30th, and that's how you can get tickets to celebrate 50 years of the Rochester Chamber Orchestra. We're happy to be joined on this Arts Friday by David Fetler. And as David said, he only looks forward. I am not in the business to ask him how long he thinks he'll continue conducting. I suppose you can conduct as long as you darn well please, David.
As long as God lets me.
As long as God allows you. What has changed for you, if anything, in conducting the chamber orchestra over 50 years?
Well, it's been a great experience and very satisfying experience. And I find no difference between small orchestra and large orchestra. The important thing is to make it very communicative, and get all the important feelings of the orchestration to get clarity of the themes and all that. It's my main goal is to inspire and make the music inspiring, especially music that's already written with great inspiration. And there's so many different styles now available. And in fact, the repertory for small orchestra is huge. I mean, you look at the 17th and 18th century alone. There's a great number of pieces. And, of course, some in the 19th century. But again, today, in the 20th century, like Stravinsky's smaller works, and a lot of contemporary composers write for smaller ensembles. So it's a very universal language. But working with this orchestra really has made me more aware of all these properties.
Yeah, that leads into what I wanted to ask you, David. I'm reading a wonderful book right now called The Rest is Noise by Alex Ross. And for those of us who came into classical music and an appreciation of it a little bit later, I grew up without much classical music around, and now I love it, and I look forward to seeing live performances and appreciating the genre. But as you learn more, you learn the big names, and the classics of the classics, and then you learn more about it. And the question I've had, and it's being answered in this book by Alex Ross, is in the last 100 years, have we seen new composition that's exciting? What excites you?
Anything that's written well. I mean, it doesn't have to be classical. It can be even popular music. Composers who have good imagination and good introspective feelings about the thing. I don't care for composers who write strange noises or strange sounds just for the sake of that. Mm-hmm. To me, there has to be some human element in the music to connect people. And there's nothing wrong with experimentation, and there's an audience for that. And there are groups around the country that specialize in innovative music, But some of that reaches a limited number of audience. But I think I think well-written music from any style, whether it be popular music, I mean, some of the Beatles, for example, they have a real communicative power, and that's what I look for.
David's been conducting the Rochester Chamber Orchestra for 50 years, and as Ray Grossworth told us, almost certainly a world record for conducting an orchestra. Kudos to that. I suppose many years from now you may decide to retire. You may. You may not. You may never. But if you ever decide to retire, have you decided what you want the final pieces that you conduct?
No, it's too soon.
I love it. After 50 years, it's too soon. Ray, you probably knew he was going to say too soon. Why stop?
We're letting David stay as long as he wants. This orchestra is his. He formed it. And as we do look toward the future, though, I would like to simply say that I've become dedicated to worldwide efforts at bringing the works of women composers mm-hmm. to the concert stage.
And
David has been supportive of that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a huge repertory of long-neglected works by women composers that have been stored in dirty drawers for many centuries, and these works are just as good as those by male composers, and unfortunately, due to the customs of many generations, all we hear are the male composers, but this is changing, and we're hoping that the Chamber Orchestra will offer opportunities for women composers, past and present, to be heard on the stage.
263-WXXI, 263-9994, if you'd like to join the conversation on this Arts Friday, the Rochester Chamber Orchestra celebrating 50 remarkable years, and Ray touching on women composing. And, you know, Ray, it's interesting. For many years, I wonder if people even knew some women were, did they have to almost do it on the sly? You say compositions that were sitting in drawers and collecting dust for years. I mean, I don't know if it was a case of them not being allowed to perform it or being afraid to tell. I mean, there are probably some remarkable stories there, aren't there?
Yeah, I do have to give credit to Ariel Remarite when he was conducting the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. He introduced the audience to Amy Beach, and she has written a remarkable volume of work, and as a result of the programming of Amy Beach, I began to look at other composers, and it's just amazing how many there have been over the centuries who've written some wonderful work, but because it's been a male-dominated field, mm-hmm. that it's very difficult for women composers to be heard, but this is changing, and I'm glad to be supporting that.
David, 50 years ago when you started the Rochester Chamber Orchestra, were things a little different? Were performances of female compositions rare, or did they exist?
No, I think they were rare, but of course there were some composers. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially in the United States, there have been a number of well-known composers, women composers, over the years. Another thing I want to mention, though, is that one thing that has been very important for me working with the chamber orchestra is to give opportunities to emerging talent. Mm-hmm. And I featured young singers, young performers. Some of them are now singing with Metropolitan Opera. Of course, they're also people from the Eastman School. And also give opportunity to young singers or children and being part of this experience, musical experience. And I'm particularly want to mention the Bach Children's Chorus of Nazareth College. They have been performing the Messiah with me and the Chamber Orchestra for over about 20 years now. And what they do is we give them at least two arias to sing, a children's chorus, and they just do a marvelous job on that. And every soloist we have from out of town, some of them from the Metropolitan Opera, and so when they sing the Messiah with us, many of them tell me, this is our favorite Messiah, and then they come and sing with us again. But they often mention the wonderful quality of the Bach Children's Chorus that are exposed to this great, inspiring music, some of which they would never hear in their schools. And then also, I encourage strongly the Rochester composers. You know, not only Howard Hanson, but Bernard Rogers, John LaMontagne, Bill Kahn, and I can mention a dozen more names, Rochester composers, and to encourage them. And, of course, also encouraging women composers as well.
I'd like to bring John Endres into the conversation if I could. Look at John. I stirred you, John. John's behind the glass engineering today, but John wears many hats here, and he knows the music catalog better than most here, better than I do. John, what did you discover that you wanted to share with us?
Well, I discovered that we have a recording of the Rochester Chamber Orchestra, David Fettler on the podium in Howard Hanson's Nymphs and Satyr Ballet Suite, commissioned for the Chautauqua Institute of Western New York in 1979 and performed as a memorial concert to Howard Hanson in 1981 at Asbury First United Methodist Church, and we have a recording of it right before me.
All right, let's listen, and then we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Maybe you can keep it moving there, John, just underneath us as we talk, because I know there are certain rules against playing too much music here and there, but I think David Fettler will allow us to break a lot of rules today. David, what's going through your mind as we listen here?
It's beautiful music. And Howard Hanson was a wonderful composer and also a wonderful teacher. And he was very, very trying to get the best out of his students. And he had an amazing ability to play full scores on the piano. and it was a real inspiration.
Yeah, this music is bringing back memories for me, too. I'm a former Eastman student back when Howard Hanson was there, and I have fond memories of watching him rehearse the Eastman Rochester Orchestra in Kilburn Hall. And back then, there was no rule against smoking. You know, he would smoke a cigar as he was conducting the rehearsals, so all this came back to me.
Let me also bring in Tom Paul, the artistic administrator for the Rochester Chamber Orchestra, because, again, you've spent some years as well, Tom. What does this kind of music stir for you?
Well, I react very strongly to the lush orchestration, the richness of the voicing, and the lyrical melodies that flow out. The beautiful melodies and the reserved power that blooms and blossoms later on in beautiful structural forms. He seems like to me like he's our own American version of Sibelius in terms of the richness and grounded power of what's there. I'm very fond of this.
Do you agree with that assessment, David?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What do you think? Let me ask John Endres, who knows the music much better than I do. What do you think, John?
I agree 100%. I was taken to the Eastman School of Music, the Eastman Theater, and Howard Hanson was the first conductor I ever heard, thanks to my parents. So I have a fond memory of the late Howard Hanson as well.
Yeah, that's what a neat story there. And what beautiful music. I mean, part of me just wants to sit back and stop talking for about the next hour and just enjoy. But as we listen to that music underneath us, I do want to ask David, because this is a rare, wonderful opportunity to speak to a conductor like this at length here. What are some of the other highlights over 50 years that really stand out among others in your memory?
Well, for example, I was glad to find out and feature a Native American violinist and composer, Arvel Bird. He's been occasionally here in the summers at the festival in Victor at the Indian reservation. You know, Indian with Onondaga.
Ganondagan.
I heard him first there, and he has written and arranged. He has written wonderful pieces about nature, about birds, about animals, and made it into a suite. In fact, he arranged it for the Rochester Chamber Orchestra, and we performed it. And then he would talk the stories behind each piece and then sing some of them, and with the accompaniment by the Rochester Chamber Orchestra. I found him a very fresh voice in our music of today, and been very inspiring. Of course, other high points was when we featured Elmer Oliveira, the first American to win the gold medal in the Tchaikovsky violin competition. We were one of the first orchestras in the United States to feature him in a violin concerto. So he came here for that. And, well, there are many others, but those are some of the more unusual things.
If you, and this is the power of technology. I hold a cell phone in my hand, and if you type in Rochester Chamber Orchestra on YouTube, the first thing that I found, the first thing, was Arvel Bird performing Rockness Monster, Rockness Monster with the Rochester Chamber Orchestra. Does that sound familiar to you, David?
Oh, yes.
There it is. And what you see in this video, and it's beautiful, is Arvel performing at the front, but also the orchestra accompanying. And so David, how? Give me a sense for the role of the orchestra in sort of balancing and supporting with him, because he's a charismatic performer at the front of the stage, but there you are as well.
Well, he is also a wonderful inspiration and a leader himself. And as we watch him and listen to him, that helps the orchestra focus with him.
I just love listening to this piece. I actually listened to this morning. It's funny that you brought that up, because slowly throughout the piece, the orchestra takes on more of a role and adds that texture and richness. And I could probably listen to this all day. I just love it. Such a unique, beautiful sound that initially, if you listen to just Mr. Bird, you might not think of it in the broader orchestral terms, but maybe, gentlemen, that's what David has such good vision for. What do you think, Ray?
Yeah, he has a remarkable vision. He's really allowed talented people in the Rochester area and beyond to flourish with the Rochester Chamber Orchestra. We're not in any way in competition with the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra. As a matter of fact, a lot of the soloists that David has chosen to perform with us are also play with the RPO, so we have a wonderful collaboration with the RPO.
What are the highlights? I want to ask Ray and Tom, because David mentioned some of the highlights over 50 years. What stands out to you, Ray?
I'm fairly new as president of the organization, but I have followed the orchestra over the years. And it's always a thrill for me to see the collaboration between the soloists and the orchestra. David is able to achieve just the right balance. It's not easy when an orchestra joins a soloist on the stage. Mm-hmm. You don't want the soloist to overpower the orchestra and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And David achieves the perfect balance in sound whenever we have performers alongside the orchestra members.
What a beautiful compliment that is. Tom, what stands out to you?
Oh, it's kind of, I think of that song, when I'm not near the girl I love the girl I'm near. And I always seem so immersed in whatever we're doing, in the wonderful leadership of David and the broad range of programming that has provided audiences here with a real, much broader palette of beauty and power in the works that he brings to mind. And, you know, it would be a terrible vacuum in our society if there wasn't an orchestra like this to play those works that are not for the big grand symphony. They're for the more concentrated, smaller ensemble. So the color and the specific kind of clarity and power that you find in this idiom is so vitally important to have the whole range in your experience. And that's why it's so fortunate for the Rochester music lover to have access to this kind of programming.
And go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to mention the wonderful performance, many performances that Tom Paul has sung with the Chamber Orchestra, especially things you don't hear too often, the Shostakovich songs.
Oh, yes.
Wonderful. Maybe you could expand on that.
Well, as a basso, naturally, I'm crazy about Ruski music. You know?
What was the piece? Do you remember the Shostakovich?
Well, those were...
On Jewish text?
Yes. On Jewish texts, but there are several works like that. I'm trying to remember which one you're referring to, because they're for chamber orchestra for sure, and they are so powerful. Right. I've fallen in love with the Russian composers. They seem to know just how to write for my voice.
Also, I need to mention a world premiere that was written for us by John LaMontagne, distinguished American pianist and composer. And he wrote it for Tom Paul and the Chamber Orchestra. Wonderful.
The Marshes of Glynn.
Marshes of Glynn.
Yes.
With an important bass solo part in that. Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of examples that my philosophy is that it should be many different styles. You know, mm-hmm. I don't like to stick to just one style because there's so much richness in a variety of styles, like Alvar Bird or Shostakovich or something written for us, you know, today.
I love saying on Fridays when John Anders is behind the glass that the man with the best voice in the building is engineering, and I have to do the interview. Today is the one day, and John will not take offense when I say that Tom Paul has the best voice in the building. And
Oh my gosh. Thank God.
Yours is a voice for hosting shows as well, Tom. let me close the conversation as we look ahead to the 30th of March, and we'll get those details for you in just a moment here on Arts Friday. But let me ask, I think, because Tom raises an important point here. So much of attention and public digestion of orchestra music tends to be in larger settings or for a philharmonic, a larger stage. But when you listen to the repertoire of all of these wonderful composers, they're so rich and broad. And if you have not been to see the Rochester Chamber Orchestra, or if you haven't been in a smaller, more intimate setting, Tom, can you give me a sense, and I'd like to ask all of you, give me a sense for the difference in being an audience member when you're for a chamber orchestra versus if you're more accustomed to, say, the Philharmonic?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of like which way do you like to hold the telescope when you look through it? If you turn it around, then you're looking a gathered kind of energy into a smaller format, if you will. And that gives you a different level of experience in terms of the intricacy of detail, the close-upness of individual mm-hmm. players. And you don't have to sort of sit back and let this huge, sonorous event take place. You can approach something from a much more calm, clear, insightful, I don't know, how am I doing? I'm running out of words.
I think that, to me, that's a beautiful way to say it, because it's a signal that as an audience member, you can spend more time discerning more of the of some of the individual layers, or it's easier to sort of see the parts as opposed to, you know, the
broad
whole.
Well put. That's the transparency, I guess, I was leading up to. Thank you.
What do you think, Ray?
Well, we're very fortunate to perform in the Hochstein Performance Hall. It has perfect acoustics, mm-hmm. so it's perfectly designed for the Rochester Chamber Orchestra. When the orchestra performs, you can focus your ears on any individual player in the orchestra, and you're able to hear them. And so that's what I like about the hall. It's small, but it's large enough to accommodate the audiences that we try to draw.
And David, same question for you. The difference, large and small.
Well, it's a matter of more intimacy. Mm-hmm. It's the way the Baroque period, they performed in courts, in small courts. It's a more enhancing, maybe. I mean, there's always very good reason for large orchestras, which are more, more grandiose, and they have to be large because these composers wrote it. But at the same time, there is a great deal of repertory where the chamber orchestra music, unlike chamber music itself, which is only two or three players, quartets, but the chamber orchestra has a wonderful variety, at the same time, a wonderful intimacy.
The 30th is coming up, and David, do you take much sentiment in 50 years as you celebrate on the 30th, 3 p.m.? Is it sentimental for you?
Well, no, I'm thinking about the 30th.
He's not thinking about 50 years. It's always, I felt I knew that was coming, even in just this short time. Before we let you go, the details on the 30th, let's do that one more time here, gentlemen.
Okay, it's March 30th, 3 p.m. at Hochstein Performance Hall. Tickets are $30 for adults, $20 for seniors, $10 for students.
And you can call 442-9778 for tickets also, 442-9778.
Let Tom do the marketing now. You know, let Ray, you know, you make him do everything, gentlemen. 50 years he's been conducting. What a great story and a monument here in local music. David, it's a great pleasure to chat with you, and congratulations. Even if it's not that sentimental for you right now, maybe it is for us. So you can allow us the sentiment on the 30th.
Okay.
Can you allow me one?
Yes, please, Tom. Yes.
Final amen here.
Yes.
I was singing in Tanglewood one summer, and William Steinberg was the guest conductor of the Boston Symphony at that time. We were going to do a Missa Solemnis, great opportunity for me. And at that time, George Sell, the magnificent conductor of the Cleveland Orchestra, had just passed away. And I walked into the Holiday Inn restaurant, and William Steinberg was sitting there looking kind of morose. And he said, "Did you hear about Sell?" I said, "Well, yeah, it's terrible, isn't it?" "Yes." And he said, "But who is next?" You know? So he was thinking ahead, too. But I just want to say, David is not a good candidate in one sense for longevity, because you know what he said to me when I asked him, "Well, why do the conductors live such long lives?" And he said, "Out of sheer meanness." So you see, David doesn't qualify. Sorry.
And yet here we are.
Yeah.
Sheer meanness, David?
Oh, not at all.
Not him.
No. I don't mean you, but that's the cliche on the conductor?
I don't even think about that.
What a lovely story.
If I could throw in one more thing,
right?
Here.
Please do.
Well, as we think about the future, obviously we're trying to raise funds. We're not alone in this, mm-hmm. with government cutbacks from the National Endowment of the Arts and the New York State Council for the Arts, and even locally, the Arts Council for Greater Rochester. We depend more and more on the contributions of people who come to our concerts. So just like public broadcasting has its own fundraising, you know, we're doing our own, and we ask people to consider helping us.
Well, very good. And if they want to do that, where do they go, Ray?
They can visit our website, www.rochesterchamberorchestra.org. There's a vehicle there to contribute. You can call our phone number, 442-9778, and we also have forms people can fill out at our concerts.
I also just want to mention that I actually started conducting at the age of 6, conducting a family band in Riga, Latvia. I come from a large family, and that was the beginning of my enjoyment of conducting, which is still the same today.
6 years old. Teach them young and get them started. And that's going to be, by the way, next hour right here on Arts Friday. We're talking about NPR's From the Top, and they talk about getting them young, too. So absolutely. Congratulations again. David, thank you so much. Tom, Ray, cheers. See you on the 30th in Hochstein, and thanks for taking the time on this Arts Friday.
You're welcome.
All right, John Andrus, behind the glass. I'll tell you that I'm going to grab our other guests. This is usually a very short break. I'm going to do my best to move rapidly here. We're talking Fringe Festival next. Stay with us on this Arts Friday.
The U.S. has long promised to recover and identify the remains of its 83,000 servicemen who have died in U.S. wars and are still missing. But critics say the Pentagon's efforts are too slow and its methods outdated.
People have not asked the tough questions or provided the kind of oversight that this effort really demands.
Today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tune in to All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 with stories from WXXI AM. Good afternoon. You're listening to Connections Arts Friday with Evan Dawson on this, your NPR news station.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from One World Goods, a fair trade marketplace in Pittsford Plaza, providing income for our global neighbors, offering handcrafted seasonal items from artisans around the world. One World Goods, accent your life, empower another's. OWGoods.org.
Okay, so as we welcome our new guests, and I say welcome back on this Arts Friday on Connections, and for this half hour, we're going to first look to Edinburgh, Scotland, 1947, to make our connection. 8 theater groups had showed up uninvited to perform at a new festival. They didn't really care that they had to create their own venues and produce the shows on their own. They simply wanted to create an atmosphere of art and really near constant performance. The following year, Scottish journalist Robert Kemp coined the term fringe festival to describe the performance. Well, over the past 67 years, the concept of a fringe festival has spread to more than 200 cities worldwide, Rochester becoming one of them just a few years ago. But unlike the Scottish performers from many years ago, Rochester's Fringe Festival is not a renegade group anymore, but one welcomed and celebrated by the city. In 2013, the Fringe Festival doubled in size in just about every facet, went from 5 to 10 days, attracted more than 50,000 people at roughly 25 venues in and around the East End. And we're going to be talking about that. Fringe returns in September, and artists are asked to apply, and the application process is open now. Here to tell us about it is producer Erica Fee. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Thanks for being here. And Dan Hurd is a venue manager from Writers and Books. Nice to have you here, sir.
Nice to be here.
Well, thank you very much. And Erica, you guys have grown a lot in just a few years.
We sure have.
10-day festival in September.
That's right.
Ends the summer, but planning is now. What's going on now?
So right now, we are encouraging anyone with a show, and that could be a theatrical piece, a dance piece, comedy, stand-up comedy, children's entertainment, music, the list goes on and on and on, to apply online at our website, which is rochesterfringe.com. And unlike the Edinburgh Fringe, which I have a lot of experience producing and directing and even performing at, we have one central application process. So we have entered the 21st century with our application process. In Edinburgh, you could still today apply to 250 separate venues. And if you wanted to fill out those 250 applications, I guess you could, and I guess someone probably has, but we're not going to make you go through that pain. So there's just one application. You fill it out online. You check off the venues you're interested in applying to. It could be more than one. And then your application goes straight on through to the venue. So then a venue manager like Dan at Writers and Books gets your application, looks it over, and decides if he wants to book your show or not.
And I imagine that can be very difficult. What kind of volume of applications do you get, Erica?
We have all sorts of different applications that come in, but we are seeing increased professionalism in our applications. So we've really gotten the word out, and we're seeing more applications coming out from outside the area, coming in from outside the area as well.
And so, Dan, let's talk about what you have to do with your job. You've got to decide what you want and what fits. I mean, give me a sense for how that's done.
Well, first we look at what would make sense for our space. We have a small performance space. It holds about 60 seats. So we want to make sure it fits our venue physically. But we're also looking for something that's interesting, maybe that's relating to words or literature, but, you know, that can be in a sort of abstract way. We've had music and poetry. We've had one in-person shows. We've even had dance in there. We had one show 2 years ago called Rules and Regulations that mixed dance with writing and music, and it was all sort of improvised together on the spot, and it created a really interesting performance.
And City Newspaper actually named that show their number one pick of the festival.
Wow.
In 2012.
Was that kind of an underdog surprise, huh?
It really was.
Yeah.
Which is another important aspect of Fringe, which is that a lot of venues, and you don't need a show with hundreds or thousands of people in an audience for it to be special and really enjoyable. Give me a sense for that, Erica.
That's right. So our venues tend to be on the smaller side. So we have everything from Bernunzio Uptown Music and Writers and Books, who hold a smaller capacity, to some of our larger venues like Theater Rocks at Xerox Auditorium, which holds up to 600 people. But you don't need to have a massive following to apply to the Rochester Fringe. Really, audiences are looking for something new. And what we found that our audiences are often looking for these new kind of collaborative experiences. So last year, let's say, at the Planetarium, there was a fantastic show that was this mashup of projection, obviously, it's in the Planetarium, dance and music. A similar show both years as well happened at Christchurch. So we have that kind of element. There's also another thing that's going on right now. Not only are we accepting applications for traditional venues through our website, We're also open to the idea of site-specific work. And we are accepting suggestions from those members of the public who have a story to tell and a venue to tell it in, and it needs to be a non-traditional space. We accept those applications by emailing, getting in touch with us. Our email is right on the website. But the sorts of site-specific work that we're looking for right now that really keeps the festival fresh and exciting are examples such as at the Edinburgh Fringe, they had a fantastic sold-out show that happened in a phone booth. At the Philadelphia Fringe, they had one that happened in a car, and you were a passenger in that car. So it's those very non-traditional spaces.
28 venues, 360 shows last year. What do you expect for this year?
We expect about the same number of venues. That 28 number does include some of the site-specific work that we're still getting in. We can't really tell you the number of shows until all the applications come in.
Right.
But we think it'll probably be around that same amount. And right now what we're really trying to do is increase the quality. So we're not just trying to expand. It's really to, you know, look at the audience experience and what kind of quality of shows are the audience seeing.
And we've talked about a wide variety of kinds of shows already. Is there anything that you don't take? Are there any limitations on the kind of performances that you don't take?
You know, the venues may have their own restrictions, but we don't put any restrictions on the venues themselves. We suggest certain things. Shows should be around an hour in length so that people can bop around to the different venues. We're not fussy about censorship. Some of the venues may be fussy about censorship.
Sure.
I don't know if Writers of Books is. You seem pretty progressive over there.
No, we're pretty open.
Yeah.
If it's a good quality.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, and the shows tend to start on the hour or the half hour or the quarter hour. So that's pretty much it. We really accept any sort of show. It tends to be performing arts. We do accept some visual arts. Some of the venues have some opportunities for visual artists. There was a fashion display last year, for example, at Java's Cafe over on Gibb Street. But it tends to be performing arts based.
Now, give me a sense for what other cities are doing and how Rochester compares in a Fringe Festival.
Well, we are a very exciting Fringe Festival, I think. Of course I'd say that because I'm the producer, but we are now a member of the U.S. Association of Fringe Festivals, and so we do know that...
You're not Fringe anymore, though. I mean, like, it's such a misnomer.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, as anyone... Joan Rivers performs at Edinburgh Fringe.
Though, to be fair, if you're performing in a phone booth or if you've got that as part of the lineup, it's still kind of Fringe. So that's cool.
You know, and one person's Fringe may be another person's mainstream.
That's true.
The thing. So we now stack up we're right at the top in terms of attendance. We actually tie with Minnesota Fringe now for attendance, so in terms of most attended in the country.
Wow.
Something that we do that's a little bit different from the other Fringe festivals in the country is that we also produce and present some work ourselves. So, for example, last year we presented Bandaloop. They danced on the side of one HSBC Plaza. 13,000 people attended. We brought in a Spiegel tent last year. We presented shows in the Spiegel tent. We did some headline acts at the Eastman Theater last year. So we do some of those larger acts and some of those outdoor public shows because we're really trying to draw people downtown so that then they can come downtown, have a good time, and then go out to our other venues too.
How successful do you feel you've been in, you know, Bandaloop's a great example. That's one that most of us either saw or in person or maybe on television, on the news, et cetera. But how successful have you been in bringing a large crowd for a big sort of a primetime event and then getting them to attend some of the smaller events?
I think that our numbers have stacked up pretty well for that. We've seen, I know that Theater Rocks at Xerox Auditorium last year purposely had their showcase show immediately following Bandaloop's performance, and they said it was incredible. They had people in there who had never been to see a Theater Rocks showcase or had never been to a Theater Rocks show, in fact. So we do think that that's been pretty successful, that whole concept.
Erica Fee is the producer of the Rochester Fringe Festival. Dan Hurd is the venue manager for Writers and Books. So, Dan, you're kind of a gatekeeper. Give me a sense for what you do, what has worked for you, and when you see applications come in, what are you looking for?
Like I said, we're looking for something interesting, groundbreaking, mashing up different genres together. Things like that catch our eye. If it's something challenging or new, we get excited about that.
For example, you and I were just talking, Dan, and we were saying, you know, a four-hour rendition of Nicholas Nickleby may be a fantastic show, but probably not really for Fringe because people are trying to attend those.
4 hours is a lot.
4 hours is a lot for anyone, let's be honest. But it's, you know, we're trying to keep the show short and mm-hmm. so that people can bop around to different venues.
And you said you have performed as well?
I have, yeah.
And did you say you performed at Edinburgh?
Yeah, yeah.
You performed in Scotland?
Yeah,
at
yeah.
their Fringe Festival?
Yes, yes. I was an actor in London for many years.
All right. So give me a sense for what that experience was
like. You know, my first year in Edinburgh, oh gosh, it was 2001. And I was in a show that had been a hit show at the New York Fringe. And this was its Edinburgh, I guess it was its UK debut. And it was called I Am Star Trek. And it was about the life and times of Gene Roddenberry and what happened behind the scenes. And there were 9 actors in it, and we did 70 characters between us.
Wow.
And it was
Are you a Trekkie, by the way?
No, I'm not. But, of course, we had to, you know, we sent up some of the shows, so we were really making fun of some of the Trekkies, to be honest. So it was funny because we would see these audience members come in, and you would see these couples, and you know the man would be dressed as Spock, and the woman was like his long suffering partner, and she'd been dragged along, and then they would sit down, and she thought, you know, why am I here again at another Trek themed show, and suddenly we are kind of sending up some of the shows and mocking them, and she's falling out of her seat laughing, and he had an angry face. But that was actually a sellout hit. So Star Trek sells. If anybody's got a show like that, apply.
And we got another couple minutes here. We're talking to Erica Fee of the Fringe Festival. Dan Hurd from Writers and Books as they get ready to, well, right now in the process of looking at what's going to be coming in 2014. One quick example of something that stood out to you that was maybe a little offbeat that we haven't talked about yet last year in Rochester, a show or something that stands out to you.
Well, we did a performance called The 24-Hour Plays.
Great example.
We had a team of, I think it was 25 actors, directors, and writers. They met Sunday night at 9. They took 24 hours to make 6 plays, to conceive of them, to memorize, rehearse, block them out. And Monday night we had a performance off book.
How'd they do?
They did pretty well. It was a little rough around the edges, but I think that's what we wanted.
That's sort of by design, isn't it? I mean, you don't want perfect polish in that scenario. No, that's very, very cool. And about a minute left here. Let's go over it one more time here. Fringe Festival 2014 is going to be when, Erica?
It's going to be this September 18th through the 27th. It's a 10-day festival. And right now, if you have a show or you know someone who has a show and perhaps they're from out of town or they're in town, have them apply today at rochesterfringe.com.
And you're looking for roughly hour-long performances?
About an hour long, yeah. We're not – if it's over an hour, under an hour, no one's going to kick you out, but that's the idea. Okay. And something that's groundbreaking, something that's new, something that's fresh, something that you're doing that you perhaps not performing the rest of the year.
Do you get the sense that you are now the size that you want to be going forward? I mean, you went from 5 to 10 days. You've got 50,000 people who come. Is this a comfortable size, you think?
I think that we are comfortable and growing and growing and growing.
That's a good answer. It's great to catch up with you on the Fringe, and we'll talk to you more as we learn about who is coming to Fringe Festival and who is going to be chosen to perform this year.
Sounds good.
Thank you, Erica. Dan, thank you very much. Good luck with you with all the difficult work you have at Writers and Books.
Thanks a lot.
We appreciate that. From the top, next, NPR coming to Rochester. All the details on Arts Friday next. Stay right here.
This program is a production of WXXI Public Radio. The views expressed do not necessarily represent the